Welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, sitting in for the rest of the band who's out on the holiday. And with me today, Harry Brunts from the 2012 El Paso Mineral and Gem Show. Actually, we talked last year about the Mineral Gem Show. It's time once again to do it all over again. So welcome back.
Why, thank you, Dennis. This is a real pleasure to be on the air with you and to be able to tell people about the show that's coming up November 30th, December 1st and 2nd at the El Mitre Shrine. We have one more vendor than we had last year, and we've got, I think, a bigger selection of gems and minerals and fossils and things for people to look at than we had in years past. It's really going to be a good show.
Harry, it seems as though, to me anyway, that there's an increased interest now in minerals and gems. And I'm not sure if it's just the hobby interest in that, or if it's maybe because of the economy, people seem to think that it's a possibility of making a few extra bucks on the side.
Oh, yeah. We have in our club, which meets at Memorial Park Senior Citizen Center, a number of people who have taken up the hobby and are making jewelry and selling it on the side to supplement their income or their retirement, whichever it is. And they're having a lot of fun, too, because besides being able to generate a little additional income when you get out and go climbing on a mountain or up in a ravine or out across the desert, you're getting exercise, too, and that's good for you.
Oh, yeah, that's always good for you. Now, you brought some samples this time around, as you did the last time, but these are really beautiful, beautiful things. And unfortunately, it's radio, and we can't post pictures up on the website just yet. But do you want to take us through the difference between geodes and nodules? Because I'm looking at them, and I thought that a nodule was a geode, but I'm a little off base on that.
Well, most people, when they see a round ball of rock, they think geode, and in many cases it is. But what happens is, in some cases, the geodes fill in with agate and crystals to where there's no space left in the center. And that's when we kind of change the terminology from geode to nodule, because a geode is really a hollow sphere.
Okay.
And in the case like the one you've picked up, that's a Baker Egg nodule or geode from down near Hermanas, New Mexico. And there's a large area there that almost everything you dig up, it's rounded from weathering. And when you cut it open, it's filled with beautiful agate like that one is. You can see that one's got reds and oranges and clear areas, and it's all banded. And then right in the very center, there's some crystals, but they've grown together.
Mm-hmm.
Where the other geode right next to it, which came from a little bit west of Las Cruces, surprisingly, is mostly hollow and filled with a white cloud-like druze of crystals that sparkles as you turn it. No matter which way you turn it, you can see the glitter of the crystals. Now, that one's properly a geode.
Okay. What causes a geode? How does Mother Nature turn these things over millions of years? What's their birth thing?
There's a lot of controversy over that, and there's a lot of theories. And I don't think anybody's ever actually come up with a set method of formation. Generally, what's accepted is that a bubble in lava, after the lava hardened, waters underground that were hot and had dissolved silica in them, percolated up through the lava, going through the cavity near the surface, cooled off. And as it cools off, it cannot hold in solution the minerals that are in it. So it starts to plate them out on the walls of the cavities.
Okay.
And the cooler it gets, the more it plates. Well, as it plates some out, then the concentration goes down and it stops plating, and more solutions come in with a different composition. So you get a different colored band. If it's cool enough, you may get crystals. And if you get just a little bit of solution and the crystals come out, the solution drains away and you're left with a hollow ball. If the solutions continue to go through and keep depositing layer upon layer as it cools, and then hot solutions come in, cool and deposit another layer, and so on, you can get one that's entirely solid. And in truth, there's a lot of controversy over exactly how. Some people believe that the whole thing was filled with a gel-like material of silica, and as it cooled, it would plate out slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting field, and it really would be wonderful to be able to spend a lot of time looking at it. But we just, in the Mineral and Gem Club, we just like the colors. And, you know, we go out and we really don't care how that thing formed. We want to cut it up and make jewelry out of it.
Oh, there you go. Am I right in assuming that this was part of the Permian Sea?
As far as I know, it was. We're probably a little bit west. Permian Sea is more, I think, considered central Texas.
Okay.
Or western Texas. But out here, we still have a great quantity of fossils around. The limestone in the Waco Mountains and the Franklin Mountains, in many cases, are just full of fossils. I brought you in this sample of fossil sponge that came from the Waco Mountains, just where Montana crosses the Wacos as it starts to go up there. And it's really interesting. As you commented before, it looks like petrified wood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the structure of the sponge.
Okay.
And in the same area as that came, there'll be another layer that has, it's almost like a black mud with rings in it or discs. And the discs are crinoid stem shells. And there'll be, it's just full of it. And then in a layer a little bit above that, there's a layer that's full of coral, fossil coral.
Okay.
And I've found over there clams, all kinds of things. So if someone locally would like to look around, even the Franklin Mountains has many, many interesting things in it. And fossils are high on the list. We had a member was over on the Sunland Park area, and in a road cut found some really marvelous clams. They were 6 to 8 inches in diameter and were replaced by a calcite-like material and really nice, really pretty.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah.
But you can virtually find fossils even over at Kilburn's Hole over on the west side of town, right around the old volcano. Any fear that that thing could actually become like active in the next 1,000 years or so?
There's anything's possible. I have been over there many times and looked down in that hole and wondered about that too. But around the edge of the Kilburn Hole, you'll find peridot, which is a very pretty, precious gemstone. And there are people that have found thumbnail-sized pieces that have been faceted into beautiful gems.
Mm.
So, yeah, if you go out anywhere out in that desert, you're liable to find something of value or of very great interest.
Let's talk about the Mineral and Gem Show. How long has this been going on now?
The club has been around since the 50s. And I guess in the 60s they started having shows. This series of shows we're having here at the Almeida Shrine, we started this series probably 12 to 13 years ago. We had the show before that in the Civic Center and before that in an armory. But this one has been running now about 12, 13 years at the Almeida Shrine. And the nice part about it is it's free parking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a big hall, but we try to maintain a real good selection or assortment of dealers that bring different things, so we don't have all one thing.
Right.
When we go to Tucson Gem and Mineral Show, the big one that's held in January and February, there'll be whole motels that are nothing but beads, and we want to avoid that. We want to have a nice selection, assortment of things for people to look at and to see. This year is a note of interest, the Zuhl Museum from New Mexico State University is going to be having a table showing some of the things that the Zuhls have collected over many years.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's really a marvelous museum if you ever get up into Las Cruces. It's just off University Boulevard. But they have some of the most beautiful petrified wood and fossils, just really marvelous, and we're really delighted that they're going to bring some of the things down and display them here at our show this year.
Now, when people start thinking in terms of collecting or even searching for a fossil, where would you send them for a primer of sorts, a primer of how to search for them safely and how not to upset the environment?
The environment. There are a number of books that are on the market, and most libraries do have books on rock collecting or mineral collecting and fossil collecting. And I think the biggest thing is we try to protect the environment by not leaving things out there. And if you find some interesting things that you take a few, but you don't rip up the area.
Right.
In some cases, certain lands are protected, and you really can't, like the Franklin Mountain State Park, you're not allowed to take things off of that. But there are areas around it which are easily accessible. Region 19, many years ago, put out a book about Trans Mountain Road. And as you go up and over the Trans Mountain Road, there are many road cuts that go through different rocks. And it's if you can find a copy of the book, it's very interesting because you can actually go step by step up the mountain, and it tells you what you're looking at.
Oh, my gosh.
And along that line, there are many publications for New Mexico and a few for Texas. It's rock collecting in that state. And I think some of the libraries may have these books, but they actually say go 6 miles north of El Paso and turn right on this road and take this road here and you'll find this area for collecting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's documented areas, and generally they're open to collecting for anyone that wants to go. But it's always best to check before you go to see if something has changed. The Bureau of Land Management will frequently withdraw an area from access that can make it a primitive area, and they don't want you to go in there. But most the nice part about New Mexico is that there's a lot of Bureau of Land Management land that is open to the public, and you can go out and dig. But if you can, check with any landowners that you cross their land to make sure they haven't got a problem with it. Our local club runs field trips every month, and if you contact us, anyone can go. We don't have any restrictions. Visitors are always welcome.
Yeah.
And we take people out, and we take them to an area and tell them what they're going to find, show them samples, and walk around. And if someone has a question, they find a rock, they don't know what it is, they bring it to us, and we identify it.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to work with people that way.
Good set of jeans, hiking boots,
oh, yes.
Water.
Yes, if it's summertime, you better bring a lot of water because it gets pretty hot out there.
Yeah.
And there's, of course, the local denizens out there that we want to avoid, like the scorpions and snakes and things like that. But most of them, if they see you first, they'll run the other way.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not that dangerous.
No, of course not. You know, it's the basic premise anyway of being out in the wild anyway is when you run into a creature, that creature is going to be just as wary of you as you are of it.
That's right.
And as long as you respect that creature, they're not going to touch you.
No, that's right. It's very, very true.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about this particular piece here, this orange. This has really piqued my interest. Is this coral?
No, actually, the piece you have there, it's about an inch and a half square cube almost.
Mm-hmm.
It's carnelian. And New Mexico, near the Cook's Peak area, is well known for carnelian. This particular piece came from a little bit east of the Caballo Mountains, but it's a very nice gemstone. It has a very lovely shade of orange. It's very hard agate, and it cuts and polishes well. It wears well. It doesn't scratch easily. But New Mexico, in this southern area, has been known for many, many years as producing some of the nicest carnelian in the country.
When I was a kid, I remember playing marbles, a lot of marbles, and a lot of those marbles that I remember were called carnelians. Are they attached?
It may well be the same material. There is agate that is brought out of Brazil that is dyed to that color, and they call them aggies or carnelian.
Okay.
And, yeah, they made a lot of marbles out of that Brazilian agate. I know. I had some when I was a kid, too.
It's amazing how this all goes back to our childhood. That's where we get our interest in stuff like this. It's absolutely amazing. Harry Bruns is our guest on El Paso Primetime this afternoon, in case you're just tuning in. We're talking about the Gem and Mineral Club here in town, but we're also talking about the 2012 El Paso Mineral and Gem Show at the Almeida Shrine Auditorium. That'll be happening on November 30th, December 1st, and 2nd. Harry, when people get so interested in minerals and gems and whatnot, that they decide that they're going to go out and do a little, like, spelunking is for caves,
yeah,
right?
That's caves, yeah.
Yeah.
We don't really advocate that. You get down in a cave and it's really easy to get stuck or get in trouble, and we don't have many of them around here.
Okay.
And those up in the Carlsbad area are pretty well controlled. And we don't, you know, it's not good to take anything out of a cave. That's kind of ruining it for someone else somewhere down the road.
That's what I'm thinking. So what is it when you go searching for these gems? Is it just called a gem search or a rock search?
Most people call it rock collecting.
Yeah.
In many cases, those of us who go out have a pretty fair idea what we're going for. If you go to Rockhound State Park in Deming, there's jaspers there. They have a display there. There's also geodes up on the hill that you can find yourself. In many cases, they're very, very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
There's an area out along the Arizona-New Mexico border called Rockhound State Park, or Round Mountain, I guess it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it has all kinds of jaspers and agates and crystals and actually geodes, too. And it's set aside by the state of Arizona. You access it through New Mexico, though. And it's a great area to go. If somebody that hasn't collected before,
mm-hmm.
you are guaranteed to find something there. Our club runs trips there periodically, and if you need information, if you contact the club, someone will be glad to help you and discover where it is. But most rock collecting is just kind of a general term. Agate hunting is what other people say.
Yeah. To me, it's so fascinating just simply because of the beauty that's involved in it and the wonderment of how all of this formed over millions of years.
Oh, it is. You'll find that the deposits around here are very unique. If you go on the internet and you look up Baker Eggs or Deming Agate, you'll find a lot of hits that you'll see people making jewelry, collecting. There's one site that shows the Baker Egg deposit where they mine them.
Right.
There's quite a bit of information on the internet that will direct you to places in the southern New Mexico area.
The tiger eye is and turquoise come to mind as two of mm-hmm. the precious gems that are out there that jewelry is made out of. And, of course, that jewelry over a period of time does appreciate in value.
Oh, of course.
But there are more types of stone, more types of gems and minerals out there that can be turned into beautiful pieces of jewelry, not necessarily for appreciation in terms of monetary value, but more in appreciation in terms of aesthetics.
That's true. In fact, when you're talking aesthetics, carving has been a popular pastime for many people. And New Mexico is blessed, southern New Mexico, blessed with a lot of alabaster, which is a very soft stone. It's about 2 in the scale of hardness, the Moth scale of hardness, runs from 1 to 10,
mm-hmm.
1 being extremely soft and 10 being diamond. But alabaster, there's road cuts in New Mexico that alabaster is laying all around. And at our show, if people come out, they'll see carvings made out of alabaster. It can be worked with just hand tools, wood rasps, penknife. You could actually carve it with your penknife. And it can be carved down and buffed up with just a cloth and wax and make some beautiful carvings.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's something that whatever you feel like you want to do, there's something out there in the mineral kingdom that's for you. For someone who likes to design jewelry, the Mineral Club teaches silversmithing at the Memorial Park Senior Center. We teach gem cutting or lapidary. And what we try to do is get people to come out, and it's very inexpensive. I think it's $20 for a 6-week course or something. They cut a stone in lapidary. Then the next class they take, they move over into silversmithing,
mm-hmm.
and they make a mounting for their cut stone. And if they like us to see a faceted stone, we have a group that does faceting, which would be like your diamond ring, that with the flats and very flashy. And then we have a class on casting where they would cast a ring to hold that faceted stone. Then we have a group that's working with glass where they take glass of different types, fuse it, melt it together, and make looks like a gemstone. And people will do a ring or wire wrapping where you take a precious wire, sterling silver or gold filled or even copper, and make a basket of some sort to hold it and wear it as a pendant
mm-hmm.
or a ring. We have a lot of things available for someone who's looking for a new hobby are looking to find a way to express their creative juices, if you will.
Right.
The Memorial Park Senior Citizen Center is an ideal place to go because there's so much there for you. And if someone were to come to the Gem and Mineral Show, we will have people demonstrating some of these techniques at the show. There's one dealer who will be demonstrating cabochon making, or taking a stone like that heart that I just showed you, made out of agate from Deming, how to take and cut that into a shape, polish it highly, and then how to mount it in a piece of metal of some sort as jewelry.
Right.
And we'll have a group in one room showing faceting, how they actually cut the facets on the stones and rings.
My goodness.
That's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. When I was a teenager, I must have been about 14 or 15, my first job ever was to cut turquoise.
Really?
Wow. Mounted on a dowel of wax and then pass it over to someone else so that they could go ahead and shape it.
Wow, I didn't know you had such talents.
It only lasted a couple of months.
Well, maybe you ought to get back into it and come over to the club.
It wouldn't be a bad idea, actually. I need a little diversion in my life. And for those of you who are listening, if you're looking for a bit of diversion, this would be an excellent time to get into this.
It is. It is. There is so much available, and the market is wide open. We see constantly people coming in, cutting stones, and the next thing you know, they're out. They've got their own little mine. They're going to other shows, selling jewelry and doing well and having a ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, the gem and mineral industry is not just a place to make money, but it's a place to have fun. And what happens is the club as a group or individuals will go together to collect, and then they'll go to places to shows. And it becomes almost like a fraternity, if you will, where you know everybody, and people say hi, and it's just a friendly group. I can't say enough about how much we enjoy it, my wife and I.
Yeah. I remember how calming it was to cut the turquoise and then mount it on this dowel with the
wax.
It's a different kind of wax, and I don't remember what it was about.
It's called dopping wax.
Okay.
There's a green and a red variety, and it melts at a very low temperature. And what happens is when you adhere it to the back of a stone and then wrap a little of the wax around a wooden dowel, it gives you a handle to work the stone.
Right.
But it melts at such a low temperature that even if you get the molten wax on you, it's hot for an instant, and if you can rub it off, you're not going to get severely burned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we use the green.
Yeah, the green is what most people use. Nowadays, as technology improves, if you will, people are using stuff like cyanoacrylate glue, super glue, and they glue the stone on top of a flat nail or something like that, and then dissolve it in acetone. So many new techniques are on the market that you and I, as old collectors here, wouldn't recognize.
Yeah. And, you know, there's something about putting a stone in acetone that just, to me, I almost feel as though it might taint the stone.
That's possible. There are some stones that are sensitive to chemicals, and it could change it. Many times when we cut the stones that are softer, and we cut them in a diamond saw that is running in a bath of oil, the oil penetrates the stone, and it does change it. So then you have to work to get the oil back out of the stone.
Oh.
But you have to run it in an oil to cool the stone as you're cutting it. Otherwise, the stone could break from heat.
Right.
But you're right. Sometimes chemicals will change, particularly turquoise. If it's been treated, you want to be careful what you do with it, because a lot of turquoise, if it's very soft or has a problem with cracks or something like that, they can use a bonding agent material in it to give it greater strength.
Right.
And if you were to put that in solvent, it would be a problem.
Yeah. And one of the things that I did learn when I was cutting these stones is the different grades of turquoise. You know, the deep blue was the most expensive, and the green, which was almost like chalk, was kind of like a throwaway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Many years ago, maybe 6-7 years ago, we went to Morenci and saw a turquoise up there, and it was a real pretty turquoise. And then we went down to Bisbee.
Mm-hmm.
The Bisbee blue turquoise is probably the prettiest turquoise I have ever seen. It is just beautiful sky blue, deep sky blue, very hard, takes an excellent polish. And then you see some of the lighter green materials from Arizona. And then not too long ago, somebody came out with white turquoise, and that threw me. It's
okay.
Like, how can it be turquoise if it's white?
Right.
Well, it's the same chemical composition, but it didn't have the ingredient that made it blue.
Okay.
But it was chemically the same material, but it had black web-like lines running through it, which
Ooh.
Gave it a very interesting pattern. And it has really found a spot in the gem industry. People really like it because of the unusual patterns. To me, if it's not blue, I'm not happy.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. Well, we have a couple of minutes left, Harry. One of the things is how to get involved with the club.
Well, if you just come out to the show, and we will have people there from the membership department, and they'll tell you about the club, what the fees are, when we meet. It's really pretty simple. We don't have very many rules. It's just come out and have fun.
There you go. And tickets are available here at the radio station, actually. So if you, if you're inclined to go and are needing a ticket or two, come on by the radio station. I'd love to show you some of the stuff that I've got in my office, including the geode that you presented to me last year. That is so beautiful.
I'm glad you like it.
Well, Harry, thank you so much for spending time with us this afternoon and reminding us about how beautiful the environment is around us here in El Paso.
Well, it's really important to me that we try to present a venue that we can get children and young adults out to look at this and to determine that, hey, this is really an interesting hobby, because in many cases, not only does it stay as a hobby, but it becomes a profession. And it's a little bit better, I think, to go out and hunt for rocks than sit and play Nintendo or one of those games and to be active and to find a new career. I know Dr. Cadell here in your UTEP Geology Department started out in our Mineral and Gem Club.
Oh, my gosh.
Back in the 50s, yeah. He actually made a presentation at a very young age to the club and became so involved and engrossed in it that he went on to become an instructor here and has been around for many years.
How cool is that? See, it all leads from just a little push.
Right.
And in that case, it was just joining the Mineral Club. Harry Mikasa Sukasa, anytime.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome. The 2012 El Paso Mineral and Gem Club is on November 30th, December 1st, and 2nd. So it's a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the El Palmito Shrine Temple.
The show starts on Friday at 10 a.m., runs to 6. Saturday it's 10 to 6, and then Sunday it's 10 to 5.
Very cool. Thank you so much for listening to El Paso Primetime. We'll be right back.